You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, like many progressive Americans, I've been following the Trump administration with keen interest. Fortunately, in our digital world, I can consult the New York Times every morning, so I'm even in Tonga, I keep abreast of current events. And as a result of that, and my experience with American politics prior to coming to the South Pacific, I reckon I know some things about the way the Trump, the investigation of the Trump campaign is going, that some Kiwis, Kiwi academics aren't familiar with. So I just want to share that with them. And so that's the purpose of the School of Social Science and Public Policy at AUT convening this colloquium.
And it's open to everybody?
Yes, absolutely open to everybody. Free of charge, absolutely open to everybody.
And how are you structuring the talk? Are you just going through sort of the first year of Trump's presidency or leading up to?
No, this is specifically reviewing the strategies, whatever we know. A lot of the strategy is secret of Robert Mueller's investigation of the Trump campaign, specifically on two legal points: collusion with a foreign power to influence the election and obstruction of justice to prevent an investigation of collusion. those are the two legs of the pedestal that we believe the special counsel is pursuing in his investigation.
And so what have you found on both of those points?
Well, it's complicated. Just a lot of circumstantial evidence. I will be presenting maybe 20 or 25 incidents that are circumstantial evidence for collusion.
What do you mean by circumstantial? Just things that he's said?
No, activities that his operatives engaged in, which are suspicious in regards to collusion. You know, actually proving something in court, as you well know, is difficult. People can always squirm out. I was joking. I didn't mean it. Everybody knew I didn't mean it, or whatever. Or we were just hanging out. We weren't part of that bank robbery. You know, there's a million ways you can squirm out of an indictment. So it really becomes necessary to show an entire trail of incriminating evidence before you can actually draw a conclusion that one person is guilty, the other person is guilty, and perhaps the president is implicated as well.
Do you think it is likely that he'll get charged or persecuted?
It's very difficult. If you look at one of the things I'm going to be talking about, because I expect this question, you know, why are we all here, making a mountain out of a molehill? First of all, you have to look at the engineer of the train. This is a former FBI director. Serious. He's already spent $3 million, probably has a budget up to $20 million. He's got a crack team of investigative attorneys. You know, that's a tough customer to deal with. If you look at Governor Christopher Christie of New Jersey, if you look at his history from 2014 to 2016, you will see that it was very difficult to implicate the governor of New Jersey in what's called Bridgegate, in which he is alleged to have been implicated in a revenge strategy against the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, by tying up the George Washington Bridge for 3 or 4 days, which was supposed to embarrass the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. Operatives are going to prison. Operatives of Governor Christie's office and of the Port Authority are going to prison. Year and a half, 2 year sentences. But the governor is escaping scot-free. And that's because people at the top deploy deniability. For example, this very well-publicized meeting with Russian operatives in the Trump Tower in June that Steve Bannon referred to as treasonous. Well, Trump wasn't there. His operatives were there. So, you know, it becomes very difficult in those kinds of scenarios to actually implicate
that the president. Particular individual. So, but like you said, you know, making mountains out of molehills, it's not really just, I mean, it is big, right? He continuously speaks out of turn, or he says things that you just would never expect from the leader of a nation.
Right. Especially a nation which has always aspired to be, quote, leader of the free world, unquote.
Exactly.
It's painfully ironic.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, that's not against the law. It's not against the law to be a fool or to make a mockery of the United States. It's not against the law.
Doesn't it look bad for you?
It looks terrible. It looks terrible, and it endangers the future of the United States for the rest of the century. But it's not against the law. But these things that I have mentioned, collusion with a foreign power to influence an election, obstruction of justice, are against the law. And, you know, I believe, I can't speak for the special counsel, but I believe that that's what Mueller is focusing on.
They'll be looking at. So you've got some audio, and what I'll do is I'll play the audio.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Can you just talk us through what this means? Are you saying this sentence is illegal?
The audio is a news conference that Trump gave in one of his Florida hotels in July of 2016, in which he calls upon Russia to expose Russia using its cybernetic expertise to hack into Hillary Clinton's email server and expose those emails. Well, I'm not a lawyer, but that seems to be against the spirit and letter of the collusion law. Shortly thereafter, Newt Gingrich, one of the spokespeople for the Trump campaign, said that Trump was joking. It was a joke. Well,
right.
I leave it up to your listeners to decide whether it was a joke or not.
Right.
But
and that can get him out of...
Well, maybe, maybe not. If I was the special counsel, it wouldn't deter me. Doesn't sound like a joke to me. But it does underscore, because of the possibility of it being dismissed as a jest, because of that possibility, Mueller is trying to create, I think, an entire chain of events which would make that statement, render that statement serious, not a joke, serious. There are some who have even suggested that that statement was a quid pro quo, that Trump needed to make that statement in order to give Russia the deniability that it needed. You know, because Russia probably...
Oh, my gosh.
Because Russia, Russia didn't want to get involved in anything violent with the United States. And there are some who suggested that it was a signal to Putin that Trump would take the rap for whatever the repercussions were. Mm. I have no evidence for that. You know, it's a hypothesis, and it's one of the hypotheses I think the special counsel should look at.
Okay. Well, I don't want to give too much away,
No. And
we will have to wrap it up. So is there anything else you want to add or you want to say specifically?
Your listeners might be wondering why Russia.
I was wondering why Russia. Isn't there like quite a tense relationship between them?
Yeah, I mean,
them?
If you're going to try to influence an American election, why not, you know, some nation that's like partially friendly to the United States, or Mexico? why collude with a frank opponent of the United States? I mean, one that was sometimes there's a danger of crossfire in Syria, you know, because Russia is not necessarily an ally of the United States in its operations in Syria, so. And we are going to explore that. There has been ideological links between Putin's Russia and the American right that were occurring before Trump announced his campaign, or launched his campaign. And I think those are quite important, so that the collusion with Russia, if it did happen, might have had an ideological reason that I think is even more sinister than the suggestion that, you know, Trump ran for president in order to get his debts canceled by Russian bankers. I find that hypothesis a little specious, but the special counsel is looking at Trump's financial records in the Deutsche Bank, so...
When does the investigation end? Do we know?
No.
No idea?
No.
Okay. Well, we look forward to the findings.
Yes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.